Blog Talk Radio.
Flash it. New thing. This is the song. Got two lyrics. Very simple and plain. We can all sing together. Nobody has to feel left out. Join in. This is a song that people need to be singing right about now. When they're telling you that you can't, you shouldn't, you won't.
Some of y'all don't understand them. Let me get to this
my things out of the way. I'm going to go ahead and talk about it, and I'm excited about the show, okay? It's a pre-recorded previously, but let me get it out the way. Okay, so here we go. That's how we do it. You can find me at Facebook, george.mango.904. You can Twitter me at hashtag soundoff97413. You can also find me on Soundoff Forums on Facebook as well. You can email me at soundoff97413@gmail.com if you want to leave information or you want to be on my show. If you just got something interesting to say, you can all also call in the second half of the show. The first hour, I'm not going to be taking any calls, so if you call, you're going to be hanging out. So the second hour, when I say, okay, we can talk about it, we're going to talk about it, okay? So you can call in at 347-989-1014. That's area code 347-989-1014. And as we always do at Ephesians 6, 6 through 13, King James Version. Not with eye service as men pleasers, but as the servants of Christ, doing the will of God from the heart. With good will doing service as to the Lord, not to men. Knowing that whatsoever good things any man doeth, the same shall he receive of the Lord, whether it be bond or free. And ye masters, do the same things unto them, forbearing, threatening, knowing that your master also is in heaven, neither is there respect of the persons with them. Finally, my brethren, be strong in the Lord and in the power of his might. Put on the whole armor of God, that ye may be able to stand against the wiles of the devil. For we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against powers, against rulers of darkness of this world, against spiritual wickedness in high places. And wherefore, take on the whole armor of God, that ye may be able to stand in the evil day, and having all done to stand. And let the church say, Amen. Y'all, okay, so this piece that I'm about to play for you, ladies and gentlemen, was played out in 2012 at UC Berkeley at a African American Heritage speech that the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan was a guest of at Berkeley. Now, like I said, I want you to keep an open mind. Now, let's not say, okay, well, Louis Farrakhan is this and Louis Farrakhan is that. We can say that about Rush Limbaugh, okay? We can say all that. Let's listen to his words. Because you know I got some great listeners. And by the way, we didn't reach 10,000 listeners yesterday. Yes! We're going to keep this train moving. So, like I said, let's keep an open mind. Here we go.
In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful, we give him praise and thanks for his mercy and his goodness to the members of the human family, that whenever any member of the human family strays from his straight path and earns his displeasure, before he punishes, he always raises from among that people a prophet or a messenger to whom he gives what is called divine revelation, by means of which he can guide that people back to his favor. As a Muslim, we believe in all of the prophets of God. We make no distinction between them. We believe in the scriptures which they brought. And as Muslims, we love all of the prophets and the word of God that they delivered in their generation to the people whom they guided. So we thank Allah for Moses, who gave to the world the Torah, and the Israelite prophets, who gave us what is called the Old Testament. We thank Allah for Jesus and the gospel or the Injil and the apostles of Jesus that gave us what is called the New Testament. We thank Allah for Prophet Muhammad, who gave to the world the Holy Quran. Peace and blessings upon all of these worthy prophets of God. I am a student of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, and I could never thank Allah enough for his merciful intervention in the affairs of black people in America, in the person of Master W. Farad Muhammad, to whom praise is due forever, for his coming among us, for his choosing one from among us, to whom he would give guidance and divine revelation to guide black people, the lost sheep, the lost people of God, lost in the Western Hemisphere, robbed and spoiled, victims of the transatlantic slave trade, deprived of our names, our language, our culture, our religion, our history, and our God, and turned upside down, inside out, and made chattel slaves for 310 long years, and enduring 150 years of Jim Crow, injustice. And now we stand at the doorway of complete change. A universal change is taking place now, and we have a great role to play in that change. I thank Allah for the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, and I thank him for the privilege of being here at UC Berkeley, and I greet all of you with the greeting words of peace. We say it in the Arabic language, Assalamu alaikum. Jesus didn't speak English, but he never met his disciples or left his disciples without saying, peace be with you. It is a privilege today to be here, in spite of all of the controversy, to see how strong the leadership of ABC has been and is to withstand. Universities are supposed to be a place or places where ideas are exposed to the students, and naturally critical thinking is utilized by students who listen to those who come to present ideas. And if those students are as educated as others would like us to believe we are, then your critical thinking will allow you to dispel things of which you find abhorrent, disagreeable, or unwise. It bothers me that in a university such as Berkeley, which has been in the forefront of so much social change, that some would come to the black students and ask them to disinvite somebody that they invited. Now, I have to say to those who dared, who arrogantly thought that they could frighten this generation, as they used to frighten our parents. That all of a sudden, because you disapproved of their speaker, that they should now acquiesce to your arrogance. So I ask you, what are you afraid of? What is it that I might say to your students or your slaves? That you don't want the mentality of your slaves to be shaken. Or are you still in the mode and the mind of a slave master that you think we should bow down to you and you tell us who we should listen to? And then after you tell them who they should listen to, you ask them, could you come to hear what you bid them not to hear? That's a mentality of the former slave masters who owned us. And I would hope that Berkeley is not another plantation, or that the UC campuses of California are not continued plantations, not only for the blacks, but for those who pay money to get an education in a world that they can never change the problems that they're going to face. Education is almost like going to a used car dealer. That car looks good, doesn't it? They clean it up real nice, don't they? But after you drive it off the lot, you find out, wow, it's not working so well. So it is with education today. You pay tens of thousands of dollars for an education. And in today's world, people with PhD degrees are struggling to find a job. Those with master degrees struggling to find a job. And here you are on the doorway of your coming out of these universities and colleges. And what are you expecting to find? Should you look to America to give you a job when 24 million Americans are unemployed or underemployed? The manufacturing base of the country is gone. What will you do? I'm not just talking to the black students. I'm talking to all the students. For all of you are being deceived by what you call education. What is education? And what is the purpose of knowledge? Are you just here to learn something so you can go out and get a job and move out of the ghetto and live in a decent neighborhood, but don't know how to take the ghetto and turn it into a decent neighborhood? Is it just education for a job and money? What is the purpose of knowledge that separates the human from the beast of the field? The purpose of knowledge is the cultivation of the human being and the gifts that God has deposited, not in some, but in every human being. God has deposited a gift that education is supposed to bring out of you and help you to cultivate and develop it and then put it back into the service of yourself, your family, your community, your nation, your world for the glory of God. Education is never supposed to enslave, but to free. Why did Jesus say, "You shall know the truth, and the truth shall set you free"? Future tense, shall. How are the people enslaved? That there's a truth that needs to come to set the human family free. Now, all of your textbooks and all of your great professors, none of the disciplines have reached absolute yet. We live in an evolving universe. Education must evolve. Otherwise, it becomes a tool of enslavement. What was is not necessarily what is. So if you can quote what was, but are not in touch with what is, then how can you prepare a future? A great teacher will always leave room for the student to stand on top of what the teacher is teaching and reach beyond. That is how civilization advances. All of your textbooks, I don't care which one you read, they're not the perfected discipline. The discipline has to keep growing toward perfection. The arrogance that one achieves when they say, I have my doctorate degree. I'm not knocking that. It's a great achievement. But if the doctor thinks that because you have it, that you now can heal the condition of the world, then the world's condition has shown that your education is insufficient. Do you understand? So black students, I like that name, African Black Coalition. We haven't used that language for a while, you know. We went from Negro to colored to black. And in the 60s, we were black and proud. We didn't see light and dark and tan. We saw each other as a part of one great family. And as long as we said, "I am black," then you never used the term minority, because black is the majority on our planet. If I'm black in America and I go in the Caribbean, I see my black
brother and sister in the Caribbean. I say, wow, it's my family. And if I venture out to Africa, I see more black, more black. I go into the Isles of the Pacific, I see more color, more black, more black. Why, I have a big family. So in the 60s, you talk about a torch. Now, they had something back then. We were black and we were proud. And the culture bore witness to it. James Brown. Huh? Oh, man. Motown. What time is it? See? That was the thinking in the 60s. In the 70s. It was so strong. Oh, you see, Berkeley, oh, this was the place then. The place of social change. The place of challenging status quo, huh? Challenging professors and administrators who wanted to hold students in a box. So they give you a test and you repeat everything according to what you just read. A degree in quotology. But not a degree in critical thinking. May I share something with you? A man came to us. His name was Farad Muhammad. He came from the holy city of Mecca in Arabia. He had a black father and a white mother, but he came out of the East for one purpose only, to raise up the black man and woman of America as a light, not just for the black world, but as a light for the whole of humanity. And I want you to think about this. He met a man from Georgia who just finished the third grade. Sharecropping in Georgia, you know, no, you don't know what that is. But ask Grandma. Ask Grandpa. They know the horror of sharecropping. You had to go in the field and pick that cotton, so school was limited. Elijah Muhammad went to the third grade, finished it, and went to the fourth grade, but never got in it. And he met this man, Farad Muhammad, in Detroit. Now think about this. How long have you all been in school? Oh, I'm a college student now. I spent 12 years in the lower grades. I'm now an undergraduate student. Why, soon it'll be 16 years in school. And then I'm going to get my master's, and that's two more years, 18. And then I'm going to work on my doctorate, and that'll be 21 years of education. Oh, man, I'm doing it. But Elijah Muhammad met this man, and for 3 years and 4 months, that's all. He taught Elijah Muhammad almost night and day for 3 years and 4 months. And then he left, and the FBI and others who knew the power of his presence, they don't know how he left. They don't know where he went. He did what he came to do, and he left. And now, third grade Elijah starts working on black people. Malcolm X, have you heard of him? He graduated from the eighth grade. And when his teacher asked him, Malcolm, what would you like to be when you grow up? He said, I would like to be a lawyer. And the teacher said, Malcolm, if you became a lawyer, my people wouldn't hire you. And your own people wouldn't trust your legal skills, but you would make a wonderful carpenter. Carpenter. It's not a dishonorable trade. But as a carpenter, he could never threaten white supremacy. He could build cabinets in white folks' homes. So Malcolm said, to heck with this. He left school after the eighth grade and got into criminal life. He met Elijah Muhammad, third grade student. And eighth grade Malcolm confounded the world of scholarship. You didn't hear me, did you? I was with him at Harvard. They brought out the best and the brightest legal minds. And you know Harvard can produce some great legal minds. But that legal mind couldn't handle eighth grade Malcolm. What did he learn from Elijah Muhammad that had him thinking outside the box of white supremacist education? He confounded them, ended up a world figure with an eighth grade education. Elijah Muhammad met Muhammad Ali. Why, he graduated from high school. And Muhammad Ali confounded the world with strength and character, not just as a boxer. But I was with Ali when some of the best and the brightest minds had him on their programs and could not confound 12th grade Muhammad Ali. Malcolm, a world-renowned person. Muhammad Ali, a world-renowned person. Elijah Muhammad had a son, Wallace D. Muhammad, known later as Warithuddin Muhammad. He didn't get a college degree, but he's known all over the world as an enlightened scholar of Islam. I could recite names after names after names, but I'll just leave mine for last. Because I went to a teacher's college in the South at the height of segregation. Black teachers could not teach white students. We were confined to black students. And growing up in Boston, Massachusetts, and having a very excellent education, I never bought a book while I was in college. What I learned in high school took me through college. What kind of college was that? I went to school before I left high school. I had 3 years of Latin, 2 years of German, 1 year of French and Spanish coming out of high school. I had algebra, advanced algebra,
plane geometry, solid geometry, calculus, before I left high school. I had ancient history, medieval history, modern history, before I left high school. So by the time I got to college in the South, where black folk were so-called educated, but an inferior education, I never had to buy a book, and sailed through until I fell in love. Come on. And my high school sweetheart became pregnant with my first child. And being the type of young man that my mother trained me to be, I couldn't stay in college. And my wife is now pregnant with my child. And I don't go to work to try to provide for the new life that's coming in the world. Now, you know, you social activists and party goers, a woman is a responsibility. A woman is a responsibility. And no man should play with a woman. Listen to me good. And no woman should allow any man to play with her. You know, there's a lot of sisters in here tonight or this morning. So when I need to talk to the men, I have to go to prison. Because the men are not here. So where is your future with the men instead of being in college, getting an education? They're in prison being turned out. Something is wrong with this picture. We want to clear it up today. Louis Farrakhan met Elijah Muhammad when I was 22 years of age. I don't have letters, no BS. BA, MS, MA, JD, PhD. But I'm known all over the world and treated as a head of state in countries throughout the world. And somebody on this campus would say, you shouldn't hear what I have to say when the world listens to what Farrakhan has to say? Now you listen today and judge me. They're so fearful that you're going to hear a word that will break the chain off of your mind. So if you have really educated them, what are you afraid of? But if your education is a web for lightweight creatures, and you don't want somebody to put some weight on the creature that they can break out of your so-called web of education. So I think Elijah Muhammad has earned the right to be listened to. Not because I say so, but the products that he has produced earn him the right to be a master teacher in every class, in every school. You should be studying what Elijah Muhammad taught that made great men out of no men. So, I'm honored to be here. They want to know, what did you pay to get me here? What benefit is he getting? This is the benefit. I'm not asking for honorariums. I'm well supported by those who believe in what I teach. So all I ask is, could you get me a ticket? And they got me a few. But if you look around and see all of the people that came because they heard I was coming, they paid their way. It's not about money. It's about you. I am so happy to have a chance to talk to you. So I won't waste any more time. You want to accept the torch and you want to reignite it. Then by the grace of God, I want to give you a torch. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. You won't have to ignite. It'll already be ignited. All you got to do is use it to light your way out of this continued cycle of non-productivity of our people. Now, what is the purpose of education? It should help us not to be beggars of another people for the necessities of life. It should help us to create the necessities of life for ourselves and our people. Some of the students may say, well, you know, I don't have no connection to the black community. Oh, yes, you do. You can't escape who you are. Maybe you would like to. I know you like hair. And so the Asians are making sure that you have as much of it as you desire. I'm not making mockery. I'm just asking an economic question. Have you visited Koreatown or Chinatown or Greek town? Or Polish town, or Italian town. These are people that came to America long after we were here. You ever see the Chinese picketing? No. Can you imagine Ching Li Chu with a picket sign? They don't like us.
We need jobs. We want to go in your restaurant. Now look at how silly we look with a picket sign asking white people to look out for us if there are only 24 million people without a job. The poor president is trying to pass a jobs bill that only will give jobs to 3 million, and they're beating him down. Of those 3 million jobs, if he ever gets the jobs bill passed, how many of those jobs will come to those who look like you and me? So let me ask a question. Where is your future? In America, begging somebody else to do for you what you have the ability to do for yourself. Now, of course, I'm not mocking anybody who wants to enhance their beauty. But one comedian did a documentary on hair. Yes, Chris Rock. Did you see it? I was shocked to see how much money some of us pay for hair. I'm not mocking. Because you certainly look pretty. You used to have hair like that. So it's not wrong for you to want what you used to have. Elijah Muhammad will teach you the origin of kinky hair. It wasn't on our planet prior to 50,000 years ago, but we were made into a people that could withstand the horror of what America put on us and survive and thrive. You were made into the strongest people on our planet because God knew what we were going to go through, and he prepared a way in, and he prepared the way out. If you look at the Koreans, the Chinese, the Greeks, the Italians, the Japanese, they built communities. They own the houses, they own the businesses, they own the banks, right?
Yes, sir.
They send their children to UC Berkeley and all the other campuses. And they come back out and bring that knowledge back and keep expanding the Chinese community, the Japanese community. They're separate, but a part of America. But look at you. 50 years ago, in the South, white folk wouldn't let us in their restaurants, their hotels, their motels. Some of you professors are old enough to remember those days. But black folk built their own little hotels, motels, gas stations, businesses, right?
Yes, sir.
And when white folk saw the type of money that they were missing by segregating us, did you think they really wanted you? Did you think they really loved you and, oh, we want to change our way now and we're going to let you in? It was always a method to the madness. So the moment they opened the door
for us to sleep in their hotels, their motels, go to their restaurants. Ours closed down. And the money that was coming through the hands of the black worker began to go into the hands of those who were our oppressors. So you want to know what happened to the torch? I wish you really knew Martin Luther King. They've reduced that brother to a slogan. I have a dream. But if you really were exposed to Dr. King's evolutionary growth, you would see the wisdom that he was coming into that caused him to be assassinated at 39 years of age. Malcolm has been reduced to a slogan by any means necessary. Do you really know what Malcolm taught? Do you have the speeches that he gave at Harvard and other places? You just got a picture. They allow you to even have him on your wall now. Did you know that when Malcolm was assassinated, the ADL, Anti-Defamation League, had Malcolm as the number one black anti-Semite in the country? Did you know that? You didn't know it, did you? Well, now I'm unfortunately I've taken his place. Am I really an anti-Semite? Am I somebody that goes around hating people simply because they're Jewish? You would diminish a man of intelligence to absurdity? Here's a book. Wait. Since we're so stupid and ignorant, you're calling us the anti-Semites. So our research department went into Jewish libraries with Jewish scholars, Jewish rabbis, Jewish historians, nearly 2,000 footnotes in this book, which should be on every college campus, not only in California, but throughout America. Why? How many of you know the Holocaust? Raise your hands if you've heard about the Holocaust. Cameras, take that picture again. How many of you have heard about the Holocaust? Raise your hands, please. How many black students know of the Holocaust of black people that put us in the condition that we are in up to this very moment? Raise your hand. Oh, just a few? Just a few. Now, why do you know the Holocaust, but you don't know yours? And then they have the nerve. When I was coming along, they gave us 1 week, Black History Week. And we raised so much mess, they improved it to a month. You don't know what happened to you that you are still wrestling with now.
No Jewish child has to be asked about a mission. Jewish children know their history, know what has happened to them, and refuse to let it happen again because their parents teach them. Holocaust victims roll up their sleeves and show their grandchildren the numbers from the concentration camps. But black parents have failed our children. You think it's hatred to tell your children what you've been through. How in the hell will they ever find a hero in their mother or their father or their grandmother or their grandfather unless somebody will sit down and say, come, child, let me tell you what we've been through to get you to this day. So most of these students today don't even know the recent history of their parents' suffering. I talked to a young sister yesterday whose father was a Panther Party member. He didn't tell her anything about his days as a Panther. And it was right here where I met Huey Newton, Eldridge and Kathleen Cleaver, and the struggle of those in the 60s who wanted to make a change. You should know this. You can't build on yesterday with no knowledge of yesterday. And who would deprive you of yesterday? But somebody who wants to rob you of today and cripple your tomorrow. That's why they don't want you to have me on the campus. Now I'm going to get right down to prophecies. Before you leave, if you've got any money, get this book. And when there's to be a dialogue with members of the Jewish community who never even talk to you, you've been on the campus with them, they never came to look at you. They only got interested in you because you got interested in me. So before you have a dialogue with them, read the secret relationship between blacks and Jews. This is not hate. This is actual facts. Who are you? And what is your future? So you can accept your mission. In the Bible, and I'm sure you have one, go get it and dust it off. In the 15th chapter of Genesis, God is talking to Abraham, and he says, Abraham, know of a surety that your seed is going to be a stranger in a land that is not theirs, and they shall serve them, and they shall afflict them 400 years. But after that time, I will come and judge that nation which they shall serve, and afterwards shall they come out with great substance and go to their fathers
in peace and be buried in a good old age. Now, many think that that was fulfilled in the suffering of the children of Israel in Egypt. It's like a prophetic, symbolic picture of your life in America under a modern Pharaoh that has caused us not to make bricks out of straw, but to make a living out of nothing. This didn't happen for one generation or two or ten, but for 400 long years. What does it mean when God says he will come and judge that nation? It means that America ultimately, listen good now, is to be judged. Not for what she did overseas, but what she's done to the people of God that have served her well and built her country, reaped down her fields, and died in every war to keep America free and strong. While we are yet singing, we shall overcome. You are the people that God is after today. Not to integrate you into your 400-year-old enemy, but to take you out from him and cause you to be the cornerstone of a brand new nation and a brand new world, bringing in the kingdom of God. Getting a little rough now. Why would you want to integrate into that which is dying? Did you know what Martin Luther King said just before he was assassinated? I was with Harry Belafonte few years ago, and he was telling me that they met with Dr. King, and it was a very melancholy spirit, and Dr. King said he was not feeling well, and Harry went over to him and said, "Doc, what seems to be the problem? You seem so melancholy." He says, "I fear that I'm integrating my people into a burning house." A burning house. Is America on fire now? Not a literal fire yet. But all these institutions are aflame now because the masses of the people are crying out for more.
That's right.
Berkeley was like, almost like the ignition of a flame that started burning in America's educational institutions. Right now, education is on fire. You know what fire does? See the form of its rostrum? Just put a match to it and watch it. It loses its form. It breaks it down and it becomes ashes. America's morality declining, falling, decaying. Can you deny it?
America's economy burning, decaying, falling. The social integration of people broken apart. Farrakhan did not do this. I didn't create the hatred in America of white people for white people and white people for black people. I met that when I was born. If I speak to it with truth, then don't blame me. You like to sugarcoat things so you can get along with your former slave masters and their children. I personally don't care if I ever get along, if I've got to hide the truth to win a friend. I have sat with rabbis. They've had dinner at my house and I at theirs.
That's right. That's right.
But at the end of the dinner, they said, Farrakhan, we've had a nice evening, but it's going to be tough love. He reached in his pocket and came out with a list. He said, Farrakhan, if you want friendship with the Jewish community, we have to watch you and listen to you over a protracted period of time. And if your words and your actions suit us, then we can begin to have friendship. Second, you have your truth and we have ours, and you must take this book, Secret Relationship. At that time it was book number one. It's now two books. And the third one is on the way. Wait a minute. One of the things that you're going to have to do if you want to be free, you're going to have to stand up. The mission of the future is not in the hands of cowards and punks. You as a woman don't need a cowardly man to stand by you, and you produce children for cowards. What is life but that which God gave us based in truth? And if one must die, why not die for truth? Why not live for truth? But when you're afraid, you're already dead. So you limp along every day to hold on to a position, and you just gotta try to get along. Is that the way you want to live your life? Many people thought I'd be dead by now. But I'm still here. Wait a minute. I soon will be 80 years old. And
all right. That's the first half of it, and we'll do the second half tomorrow. I've been biting at the bits to speak tonight because I find myself to be very open, a very open person to everything. And I have grown up in an environment where I have been on both sides of the fence as far as being part of the system and then being a part of another system. The Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, to me, this is only my opinion, has not said anything that should be offensive to a person that is Caucasian. The conception of our, whomever you think he is, that is who you want him to be. That's fine. That doesn't bother me. Do I agree with everything Louis Farrakhan says? No. There's a lot of people on this planet I don't agree with what they say. But we all have opinions. We are all believers. Some of us are all believers and strong in our belief and our faith. So when we go and we think about these things, Mr. Farrakhan comes out and he tells you a little background story, because that's how I like to do it too. And then he says, okay, let's get to the real matter of this. He starts off and he talks about what is an institution and what is the institution for. Do we go to school to learn things, or do we go to school to learn things so we can get a job? Do we learn things just to edify our human satisfaction with all these great titles in front of our names, or behind our names, however it goes? Those are one of the questions that I brought back way back in the day, way back when we first started this. See, people can say what they want to say about different people, but when the truth comes at you, you're going to either say, no, I don't buy it, or he lying. Now, when you say, no, I don't buy it, means you got to sit there and you got to think about it a little while, or you're going to, you know, you don't buy it, you think he's lying, whatever, okay? How can a person, if you mention the person's name, immediately you shut down? Immediately. We're programmed people. Listen. When the opposition tells you to jump, you say hi. If the opposition says we want you to move out the way and be silent, you'll do it. And they never say a word to you. But you see, what they do is they give you these code words, keywords, these subliminal messages, these numbing agents in your brain. Yes, numbing agents. To desensitize you from the truth. Now, everything Louis Farrakhan has said, Minister Louis Farrakhan said tonight, he has said nothing but truths of history and the background. He hadn't even gotten to the meat and the potatoes of the real talk. But he said a couple things that was very interesting. He brought up the Jewish Holocaust and how that the Jewish Holocaust, people could still roll up their sleeves and these people who were in the Holocaust can identify themselves as Jewish slaves, Jewish people who were in concentration camps. You can visually see that, okay? And they're proud to show that because they have survived. Then he asked the question, he says, how many of you know about the African Holocaust. Do you know, people, that Africans who were transatlantic trade, slave trade, had their own Holocaust? That's our Holocaust, y'all. So if you take that, and what he said was, do not be afraid to talk about what we have come from in the past, because that's who we are. If you shy away from that and say that was in the past, then you know who you do not know who you are. Why? Because they have stolen your identity, first of all. Second of all, they're stealing your identity again, because they are telling you you don't need to know the past because you are a new creature. But yet, we're still fighting for jobs, we're still fighting for equality, and we're still fighting for justice. Let me say that again. We're still fighting for jobs, we're still fighting for equality, and we're still fighting for justice. Now, when these people are pulling back their sleeves and they're showing you their numbers from the concentration camp, they can tell you all the horrible stories that goes on. You've got stories of World War II and all these different things. Have they done something to equal that? To balance it? See, when black people talk about slavery, people want to shy away. But somebody talk about Holocaust, woo! Oh, yeah, let's talk about it. Oh, man, the Germans, man, what they did to the Jews was messed up. Okay. But then you will say this. This is what people will say. Man, what happened to the slaves back in the day? That was messed up. Well, my people ain't got nothing to do with that. Whoa, time out. Our people ain't had nothing to do with the Holocaust either, but we still be making movies about them. We still be talking about them. We still honor the Jewish people for their strong belief and, you know, they've been carried through. But the time we mention slavery, oh, hell will break loose. You see, because Ms. Dorothy Tillman says that slavery is America's dirty little secret nobody want to talk about. Mm-hmm. Listen, if we as Americans let slavery and what all the horrible things in slavery go away and let it fade in the past instead of being factual information, I'm telling you, people, the next 20 to 30, 40 years from now, our children will not understand slavery, will be disconnected from slavery, and that is what they want. We cannot afford that. We cannot afford to lose what they have done to us. Because, come on now, let's be for real about it. If your girlfriend screwed you over 3 years ago with your old man, you're going to still be mad at her. Somebody did your mama wrong, you're going to be mad at them. Somebody did something to your puppy dog, what you going to do? You're going to hold a grudge. Now, I'm not saying black people hold a grudge. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying you can forgive, but you cannot let our children forget. You see, because I'm four generations removed from slavery, maybe even three. So I don't understand exactly what it is, but I'm telling you, I was born in 1977, the era of 1960, from removed from that. I'm close to that Martin Luther King era, John F. Kennedy era. I'm close to that. That's where I'm birthed out of. Okay? So I'm in a generation now where my children, they don't understand it. They don't understand the concepts of racism. They don't see it. But they're being challenged with it in institutional social and economical situations where they don't understand it. But I'm telling you, that overt racism, it's there, y'all. And until the people open their eyes and stand up for the life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness for all people, y'all, it's dead. I'm telling you, 20 to 40 years from now, people say, well, we're in a melting pot, and about time, you know, when y'all become grandparents and all that stuff, you know, racism won't be, no, racism will be continued through the other generations. You see, the machine changed faces, you see, but Satan maintained the hold. Because we fight not against flesh and blood, but against principalities and powers, rulers of high places, and spiritual wickedness. Okay? So, hey, it's going to continue to move on. What he was saying. And I've listened to the speech numerous times. I would say about at least good 30 times I've listened to these speeches. Dissecting it, sucking it in, praying about it, ladies and gentlemen. And that's why I love my audience, because you guys can listen for yourself. That way, listen, that's why I play it for you. You can listen to it. You can digest it. You can come up with your own conclusion. But when I go and critique it, or I go to talk about it, I'm giving you my spin on it. And I'm trying to bring awareness to everyone, y'all. Do you think that slavery is a black thing? No, y'all. I'm talking about the New Jerusalem. The New Age. The New World Order is coming. The New World Order is coming. They've already told you, because what did they just do to the Pope? They've got a new Pope. What's coming with China? Well, see, they've already crushed Syria. You're going to crush Syria. And then they got to crush Iran. Once they crush Iran, the Arabic Spring is over. They've got control of the Muslim world. Okay, listen. Jesus said that the prophecies must be fulfilled in order for him to come back, period. Okay? So where I'm going with this is to get you to understand is slavery is an evil thing. Within the slavery, we've already had racial slavery. Now they are putting us into an economical slavery. Okay? See, when you got the queen bee sitting up there, she's doing nothing but giving birth to babies. Then you got her little helpers. And then you got these millions and millions and millions of soldiers and worker bees. All they do is go collect pollen and all that stuff. They work. They're so busy working for the colony, they don't even have time to stop and breathe. Why? Because their job is to take care of the hive. So, if we look at our society as the hive, okay? We've got all these millions and billions of people doing their everyday life and carrying on doing whatever and stuff, and don't have time to breathe and having time to actually think for themselves, because they put us fighting amongst ourselves about this budget, Democrat, Republican. Listen, it doesn't matter. The only thing that matters is we do not cut schools. We don't cut firefighters. We don't cut policemen. We don't cut hospitals. We don't cut the necessity things that make a society function. And if you cut the program for the poor, then what happens? Then the poor uprise. if they have nothing to lose, then they will rebel. And if we rebel, they will tell us we need to keep order. How do you create order? Well, you saw what happened in Hurricane Katrina. They will call martial law, and then that way there is no power structure. The only power structure is from the top to the bottom. We talked about this last week. If there is a middle class, then there is no deception. If there is a middle class, that's right. If there is a middle class, there's a deception. If there is no middle class, then the deception of the veil has been released. And the people say, well, now we really see that the top 1% is making all the monies. And the people down here are grabbing for the crumbs. Just like Minister Louis Farrakhan said, should have never been changed into the point where it became a corporation. He didn't say that, but he was talking about being slaves to the education system, which is completely what I call the corporation. Because if you go to school for 12 years, okay, total, and you get that PhD, you come out owing the government as soon as you step out to be yourself. So while you're working, while you're in school, you got to get these part-time jobs, you're trying to get connections, you're trying to do all these things. If you know somebody, you're good. If you don't, you're trying to put your resume together, you step out, now you're in debt. How you start a family in debt already? Well, hopefully you can pull out a loan or you can do some credit cards and all that stuff. Right? But if you go to Oregon, I can only speak about the places that I've been. You go to Oregon, there's a lot of PhDs running around there. A lot of master's degrees running around there. A lot of intelligent people who have education but can't find a job because that area is not designed to keep up with the rest of the United States of America. Now, they are getting all these great technological things going on, but it is not, the infrastructure is not built for that. It is not built for that. So they have to move from that part of the world to the South in order to compete to get jobs. Not everybody can uproot their families and move down South. It's expensive in Oregon. The cost of living in the South is much cheaper, but if they don't have money from the beginning because they're already in debt, the two don't add up. So where do we stand is the question. Where do we stand? Do we stand on the principles of right, or do we stand on the principles of wrong? Because at the end of the day, it doesn't matter if you're a Democrat or a Republican, we need to get something done. Democracy has never been for the wealthy. You see, when we talk about them, now just think about this, Americans. Think about this. When we talk about going into foreign countries to help them with democracy, are we going to help the rich? No. We are going to help the poor so they can establish liberty, justice for all, so they can have jobs, work, have a good living, good wages, and be able to be a functional society. Not once do we go in there if a society is already together and has money. So if we're in a democracy and we're talking about democracy, shouldn't our jobs also be able to give the poor the opportunity to reach those type of steps? And you know what? I'm so tired of people talking about they need to pull up their bootstraps because I've done it. Everybody's situation is not the same. And I'm also tired of, there used to be money out there. There is money out there, but you don't understand, in order to get that money, you've got to go through criteria that stop you from getting the monies. Oh, you can put all the hard work you want, but there's going to be some roadblocks. Lots of roadblocks. How do you overcome those roadblocks? You got to understand you can't take no for an answer. There's one way. Two, you need to have be touched by God to get an opportunity for somebody to give you a helping hand. There's no way in the world that the Pell Grant should not be able to pay for a full ride for a 4-year college. But if you look at the defense budget, they're asking for trillions of dollars. For what? Missiles, bullets, all these things, contracts. But yet and still, you got to think about this, people. Yet and still, they're downsizing the military, the service. The people that they're kicking out are veterans who've been to war maybe 6 or 7 times. Their mental status has not helped. The VA is going to be overran, flooded. Social Security is going to have a huge influx of applications because they're going to be able to qualify for Social Security. But you're telling us, the United States of America, that we should get rid of Social Security. But you're proud of the troops. Support the troops. So you're saying support the troops while they're in the military. Once they get out, who cares what they do? Okay, that don't make sense. Because majority of the troops that are getting out of the military this present day will be disabled. They will be getting VA funds. They will also be getting federal assistance, which comes from Social Security. Okay? So if you cut out Social Security, you cut out all the benefits that comes with Social Security and the VA, then you're telling these people that we shouldn't support our troops. And you can say, well, you can debate it, we can go around and around and around about it, but the point is this. The programs that are for the poor are needed in order for a society to function. If you take away welfare, housing, free medical care, free dental care, Medicaid, Medicare, you take all that away, what happens to those people? But you will get mad if somebody's standing on the corner asking for a dollar. You'll get mad if somebody want to wipe your window and ask you for a dollar. Where are these people going to live? Okay? We got these nonprofits who say we'll build your house. We got these nonprofits who say we'll give you money for this. We got this, we got this, we got that, we got this. And yet and still, we're fighting over something that just don't make sense, people. Listen, forget big government. We don't want big government. We want the government to take care of the poor, period. We want the states to take care of its citizens. But the state is too busy being greedy, stealing money from the funds for the cities and the towns who need it. So when the government is saying, hey, we want to do this, but we can't because every time we send money down to the states don't know how to appropriate the funds. You people out there who are intelligent, who know a little bit about something, always take the high road. You want to be moral. You want to do the right thing. Well, the right thing is to take care of the poor, period. If you believe in God, if you believe in Allah, if you believe in a being, you know that the poor is the most important. You should not treat a person that may not be in the economic status as you are, political status, or even a sociological status that is not better than you. You should never mistreat them. You should treat them as your equal. Or most people will call you bougie. Uppity. Not in touch with reality. And that's what America's got to realize. See, a lot of people don't want to talk about the hard stuff because the hard stuff is just too scary. But if the people become people and start being sheeple and just doing what people tell them to do, when we stand up together together and tell the government what we want, we'll make something move. But you got all these lobbyists who sit in the White House. Listen, you got these lobbyists who sit there, and all their job is to do is to cause confusion in the House and the Senate, period. So if we vote and say we want this, that's local. That's the state stuff, right? But when we have federal races and these federal things, for example, marijuana, right? California, Washington, Colorado and Washington, they can smoke marijuana freely with all that stuff, right? Okay. So now we have no huge statistics from Washington State or Colorado with people ruining their lives because they're smoking weed. That came out yet, but it's going to come, okay? So what I'm saying is we've got to fight grassroots-wise for things that we want. We've got to understand what happens. We've got to see the bigger picture. They're talking about balancing the budget in the next 10 years. In the next 10 years, we could not even be the United States anymore in the next 10 years. And you can believe not to believe me if you don't want to, but if you look at where we're going, because Minister Louis Farrakhan had really spilled it out to you biblically, God said he is going to put some pain on those people who have hurt their children, okay? Another thing is that he says that black people were made to be slaves. Now, whether you believe that or not, that's you. But black people are the only human beings on the planet that can handle it. And yet we still go through and we struggle or we find ways to make life better. Yeah, I'm saying we're not saying we've made it, but we have found ways into maneuvering in order for us to still be blessed by God and God move us forward. There's a lot of situations where we can look at America and make it better, but we cannot do it divided. Cannot. Will not. But as long as they got that one thing, those things on us, they got racism, they got politicalism. I mean, since when does the Democrats and the Republicans run what we say? There are political parties. You want to call it a republic? Well, if it's such a republic, then why don't our voices count? Oh, we got the right to freedom of speech every day, all day. You say something, one thing that somebody they don't want you to say, you're gonna end up in a burning house. Now tomorrow, I'm gonna play the other half of the speech, and then after that, the full week, I'm gonna play the black agenda. Does America need a black agenda? Listen, the black agenda is good for America agenda, period, in my opinion. And the reason why I believe that it's good for America is because if you cut out black people in America, if you cut us out, what is America? America wouldn't have culture. Black people have brought so much to this country that it's unbelievable. Our culture alone has shaped America to what it is. Our country would not have any type of real history or understanding if it was not for the black. Now, you can debate, like I said, you can debate me and we can go round and round all day. But the reality is black people are needed in order for America to understand who they are. Okay? Because if we stop talking about equality, and we stop talking about rights. See, blacks and women go hand in hand because we were all on the same prohibition about being able to vote and being able to be free. What is the significance of the woman? You see, white women can do whatever they want, their freedom, but they were still considered to be second-class citizens, just like blacks were not considered to be citizens at all. So when the combination of the two have been combined, then the government has already clumped those two groups together. And so if you're saying that women are able to do certain things up and down the corporate ladder, then you've got to look at and say, well, blacks have to move up and down the corporate ladder as well because we are connected by law. You see, this is a thing that a professor is going to say during the Black Agenda, but I went and did it, and when we talked about the Constitution, let me pull it up because because it's important. It's important that we know it's important that when you read I think it's the 14th Amendment, when you read the 14th Amendment, we're so tied in into it that that Congress has the right, okay? Congress has the right to dissolve slavery at any whim. Fifteenth Amendment. Okay, the 14th Amendment. Fifteenth Amendment right here. It says Section 3, this article shall be inoperative unless it shall have been ratified as the amendment to the Constitution by the legislatures of several states and provided by prevented into the Constitution. So, it says, Section 2, it says, the Congress shall have power to enforce this article by appropriate legislation, okay? And every time it says that, every time it says that specific sentence means that we are still held in control by the United States government. So at any time, it says it again. It says the Congress in Section 2. It says the Congress shall have the power to enforce this article by appropriate legislation. So once again, even though we say that we are free, at any time, the government can go and says, we want to snatch this away from you. It don't even need our vote. It don't need our vote. That's the reality of, are we still really free? Because that's the key question. If the government says that at any time Congress can dissolve that article, okay, let me put this in a perspective where you people can understand. It's like having a lease on a house or buying a house. in the clause, if the person feels like you're not keeping the end of the contract, they can always take the contract back, whether you feel like you are holding up the contract or not, legally. So if the government decides one day that they don't want to uphold that, and they hold a special Congress, which they can have, and they go up to the point where and they dissolve it, now the president can veto it. He could veto it, but it goes back to the House and the Senate. Once they get approval, he can't veto it no more. So the factions who want to separate from America, they can automatically do that, and booyah, slavery back in effect. So are we really free? Women, are you really free? I'm not making this up. You can Google it yourself. Read the Constitution. You got PhDs. You got 4 years of college. You smarter than I am. You go look that stuff up. But we walk around thinking that we're better than somebody else because we went to school. But all the time, who has the power? The republic that we vote for. You keep that in the back of your mind. And don't think, people, I don't want y'all to think that we, as people, we have rights. We do have rights. But you read Section 2, it says Congress has the right to enforce by proper legislation. That means they can hold a special session. They can say, we don't want that no more. And it can be taken away. Not only can they do that with these amendments, they can also do that to the presidency. Now, would it happen? Could it happen? Maybe she could have, would have. I don't know. But that is the point I'm trying to make. What happened if it does? Something traumatic happened. Something traumatic happens, and the government says, we have no choice but to have martial law. What happens? They will go and have special Congress session, and they invoke that Section 2 and all those articles. And what happens? Our rights immediately are in the hands of the government, period. Now, because we're going to be talking about this topic for the next week, for the whole week almost, if you listen to this and you have a comment or you want to add something or you want to debate me or give me a different point of view, please, because right now my wheels are spinning. And we are doing what we can in order to keep this America afloat. I mean, good citizens, we're trying to prop it up. We're propping it up with sticks. We got bricks. We got mortar. We got straw. We're trying to patch this boat up to keep it afloat. But some dummy keep pouring water in the boat. My name is George Beverly. This is Sound Out Farms. I'll see you tomorrow night. Here we go.
Flash it. New thing. This is the song. Got two lyrics. Very simple and plain. We can all sing together. No ads to feel left out. Join in. This is a song that people need to be singing right about now. When they're telling you that you can't, you shouldn't, you won't. Tell him this, no matter what you do. Seven of flame, seven of flame, seven of flame, beautiful thing, and it's the truth.